Hey, welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you as always by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Joined now by the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, the guy that's got the best voice in America, and that is Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes. I was kidding before we went on the air with Mark that every time I talk to Mark, immediately, Dusty might be able to relate to this too, where all of a sudden, Dusty, my voice just drops. Like, I almost try to go deeper with my voice. I'm not cognizantly doing that. It's just kind of automatic. So that's the impact that Mark Johnson has on us broadcasters. And by the way, Dusty's nodding his head. He does the same thing, Mark.
I guess they say we should have an impact on those around us. I guess if that's my impact, that'll work out just fine. But, yeah, if it's the best voice in America, I'm not getting paid like I got the best voice in America. So I need somebody. Somebody has got to help me out in that regard.
Okay, well, we'll see what we can do. We'll do some fundraising, GoFundMe page, and whatever else we can do for Mark Johnson. Hey, man, it's good to hear your voice, and it was great to hear you on the calls of Colorado's run in NCAA tournament. Let's start at the very beginning. Was anybody surprised? Did people expect around the program that they would be in the I call them the play-in games, the first four?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you never hope for that. But, you know, once we started seeing what the bubble was looking like in, you know, those last, two or three days of the conference tournament weekend, things got just insane. And so we knew it was a possibility. So we get back from Vegas after the championship game loss in the Pac-12 title game to Oregon. We got back in the middle of the night, Sunday afternoon we're over at Tad Boyle's house. He had a little gathering for a few folks around the program. And when I walked in, he greeted me, and I said, "Well, what do you think?" And he said, "I have no idea, and I'm really nervous." And so I said, "You're going to be okay going to Dayton?" He goes, "Mark, I don't care where they send us as long as we're in." And so when it popped up on the screen, he was exceedingly excited. And it actually worked out pretty well for Colorado, I think, in the long run. But, you know, you get 26 wins. That's a record for a season in Colorado basketball history. And had three not good, great college basketball games. I mean, with Boise and Florida and then on to Marquette in the second round, they were three great games to be a part of and call. And so it was awful fun. I wish they could be going back to the Sweet 16 this weekend in Dallas and maybe take on North Carolina State, but I guess it wasn't in the cards.
Well, the Florida game was just absolutely fantastic. We were watching that down in my basement, and my kids, we were jumping up and down and going, "Oh my goodness, oh my goodness, oh my goodness." We kept saying it over and over. And I've been one of those people that I don't want to see high scoring games all the time in whatever sport it might be. I'm okay with the occasional 2-1 pitching duel. I'm okay with the 13-10 defensive battle in football. I'm okay with a 62-59 basketball game. But I'll admit, if I had to choose 10 outcomes, I would probably, 6 of those 10, I'd like to be maybe higher scoring. But that one was at such a high level in regards to the playmaking, the shot making. And I granted, both defenses didn't play great, but there's a reason for that. Were you able to kind of soak that in as that game was going and as it continued to be a high level all the way through?
Well, we knew it was going to be a high-level game. And I'll tell you this, it's always funny, before games I get together with the other broadcasters, and we compare notes, okay, who's in, who's out, what might we expect, is there anything I need to know kind of thing. And Sean Kelly, who's done Florida a couple of years, but I've known him for 25 years, he was in the NBA for a long time, he walks up and we're chatting, and he said something about, "Well, of course, Colorado's not going to try to run with Florida." And I said, oh yeah, they will. And he says, "You can't be serious." And I said, "Yeah, I'm dead serious." He said, "I said, this team loves to get out and run." I said, "Come on, Sean, they averaged over 80 points a game this season." And he says, "Well, good luck with that. Have a nice flight home tonight." And it chuckles. We're kidding each other. And so I said, as he's walking, I said, "Just wait, man." I said, "You're going to be surprised." Well, on the way out, he passed me. We were still wrapping up, and I was sitting during commercial break, and I tilted my headphones aside. And he goes, "You weren't joking." I said, "Man, I told you." But I kind of got the sense the Florida people, the coaching staff I'm talking about, did not believe that Colorado could run with them. And I knew if they were truly kind of, overconfident about that, that was going to be a mistake on their part. I expected that to be a high, scoring game. Now, did I expect 102-100? Absolutely not. But I thought that game would be in the upper 80s. And so it was what I thought it was going to be. And, of course, when you get a chance to not only witness but, broadcast a shot like that, that's a game winner in the tournament. The whole world is watching. That's awful fun. And I felt really good for KJ Simpson for able to have that moment.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, what was 11-point lead? I think it was 94-83, and Colorado kind of let slip, and then Florida made some amazing shots from three-point land, and and then they had that last possession, and I was thinking Colorado better make this because I didn't like their chances going into overtime because of the momentum. But then we saw the other night, A&M hit a three, and you're like, oh, man, Houston's in deep trouble, and Houston found a way to pull it out. Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffalo, is our guest today on the Sports Ticket. And then the game against Marquette, I think a lot of people would say, you know, you play in the play-in game or the first four, how much gas is left in the tank, especially after everything you had to spend energy-wise against Florida, and you're watching Marquette shoot 68% from the field in the first half, and I'm saying, yeah, but they're only up 11. I mean, if you shoot 68%, you probably should be up by more than 11.
Sure.
Next
sure.
thing you know, Colorado tied it. They got hot in the second half, and then we had a game the rest of the way.
Well, and, you know, the thing about it is, to kind of look at kind of the long view of this thing, you know, the Buffaloes have been playing basically an elimination game almost for the last month.
Yeah.
They won 10 of their last 12 games. And as you kind of indicated, where they surprised you in the playing game, we weren't sure they were going to be in there. And so every game down the stretch had been this way. And I began to get amazed that Colorado continued to play at such a high level. You think at some point you're going to have a little letdown.
Yeah.
And maybe the, you know, the pressure, the intensity, and everything you're dealing with is going to kind of get to you at some point, and it didn't. And so here you're down 11 points, like you talk about, and the Eagles had shot phenomenally well in the first half. By the way, their point guard, Tyler Kolek, is unbelievable. The game before, the Florida game, we sit down, second half is just starting of the Marquette preceding game that they had, and against, Western Kentucky. And we're watching this game, and I'd known a little bit about Marquette leading up to the tournament, but I didn't watch them or anything. And we sit down, and I suppose three or four trips up and down the court, I look at my partner and I said, who the heck is number 11? Holy cow, that guy's good. And then we watch him for a few more minutes, and I'm like, that dude is unbelievable. And so I look at my wife, an All-American, right? And you find out how good a player he is. And so in the second half of that game, I thought Colorado would have a chance. I didn't think Marquette was a great defensive team. I thought they were a very active defensive team. Their defensive numbers were solid. They weren't spectacular, but they created problems. They created a lot of turnovers. They averaged, what was it, about 19 points off turnovers per ball game. And I knew Colorado would have to take care of the basketball. But I thought you can score against them if you move the ball. And we saw that in the first half a number of times. When the ball went back and forth, they got good penetration, inside-out action, you'd see Colorado getting good shots. The shots weren't falling. Then they began to fall. The problem was, and this is what it comes down to in every game of the tournament, you've got to hit a shot or two.
Yep.
And the Buffs had, what was it, K.J. Simpson, I think, had two threes towards the end. Cody Williams had one on the right-hand side, left-hand side. You had Javon Hadley. They had good looks, and they just didn't go in. And so I'm at home, and Marquette's getting ready for the Sweet 16.
Yeah, that one that Simpson had, he had all day to shoot it. Sometimes you have too much time to shoot it and think about it. And, yeah, they had some amazing looks, no doubt. So Colorado is going to join the Big 12 next season. I'm sure you're well aware of that. We're looking forward to having you come back in our neck of the woods more often in the future. You can come on by and let Bowden bring you to appointments late. So that should
as
be
he always does.
As he always does. By the way, is it creepy when Bowden sends me a text and he shows a picture of the golf course which has snow on it? And he has a picture of one of the greens. Of course, he's the superintendent at the Bullitt Country Club. But then also in the picture, he has two pictures he sent me. The other one is a picture of my house. So should I be worried? That seems a little bit.
Well, yeah. Listen, John's active. He's highly motivated. And, you know, I'm going to be out there out in Kansas this weekend. His beautiful daughter's getting married this weekend. So that I figured that's the reason the basketball guys didn't let me win. I had to be at the wedding this weekend.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah,
I just thought it was funny. The picture of the golf course, and there's a picture of my house. I'm like, what are you trying to say here?
And the thing is, in regards to John, you should always be nervous.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. I kind of learned that, but now I'm even more nervous after seeing that text. Or perplexed, one of the two.
Yeah, you really get nervous if he sends you a picture of him sitting in your living room when you're not there.
Oh!
You really got to be nervous.
I've got to tell my wife to shut the garage door. That's yikes. Honey, somebody's here to see us.
Exactly.
He's already inside. So Colorado joins the Big 12 next season. Let's talk from a basketball standpoint and perspective, now that Colorado season is in the books, of course, Tad Boyle, very familiar with the Big 8 days and of course, the KU grad and all that. But where do you think KU or Colorado fits in the puzzle when it comes to the Big 12 next year? You're going to have Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, Colorado joining the conference. Of course, Oklahoma, Texas leaving. The Big 12 added 4 schools this year, so there's going to be a total of 16 next year, if I got that right. There's been so many changes. Hard to keep up. But what are your thoughts on where Colorado fits in regards to the pecking order in the Big 12 next year in basketball?
Well, I think it's going to be fantastic because you want to talk about a basketball conference. Holy cow.
Yeah.
You know, and you went down to schools there, and you didn't mention the fact that Iowa State is doing the dance right now. And so there's another one. You know, it's going to be really wild. I'll tell you a great story. So when the news broke that the Buffs were moving back to the Big 12, I was doing my annual 100-mile wilderness ride, and you never get cell signal. It just sporadically, every once in a while, a sliver hits you, and you feel your phone in your pocket buzz, and you almost forget that it was there. And we're riding along, and I feel something buzz in my pocket. I pull my phone out, and I'm sitting up at, you know, 13,000 feet someplace in the mountains. And I look down, it's Tad Boyle calling me. I'm like, well, I can't even believe I get the cell signal. So I pick it up, and I go, what are you doing? And he goes, well, what are you doing? I told him, I said, I can't believe you got me. I'm in the middle of nowhere right now. And he said, did you see the news? And I said, I haven't seen the news. And he says, my job just got a whole lot hotter, or harder, I should say. And, you know, when you look at this league, the level of basketball talent in tradition and history is off the charts. And so it is literally going to be a war every single game when you go out in that league. You know, it was already good this year. I mean, the Pac-12, the Big 12 got 8 teams in, and now you're adding Colorado, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State. I mean, you know, very good basketball history with each one of those programs, and obviously the Buffs are playing good right now. So, yeah, I think it's going to be an amazing conference, and I'm just glad I'm not the coach, because a lot of good coaches will end up getting fired because they're playing in such a good league.
Yes, that's an excellent point. Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. So let's look at the Sweet 16 before we turn our attention to college football and how Colorado fits in next year on the Big 12 landscape. The Sweet 16 game's coming up on Thursday. We got Clemson, a 6th seed against Arizona, 2. We were just talking about Arizona. San Diego State against UConn. That's a rematch of the national championship game a year ago that UConn won. UConn's blown through the first 2 games. Illinois and Iowa State looks like a great Sweet 16 game. And Alabama, North Carolina also looks like that could be a track meet. Of those 4 games, which ones jump out to you?
Oh, you know, I was just, before you called, I knew you were going to ask me about it, so I thought I'd glance at the schedule real quick. Going down the list how they're laid out. I'm going to go Arizona. I think Arizona is a very good basketball team. I don't think they're a great basketball team. They're not nearly the defensive squad they have been in the past, but they are a good basketball team. Now, questions arise. Caleb Love, I'm not sure, is playing very well. Pac-12 Player of the Year. I mean, he got pulled out of that game, their second-round game here the other day. I like UConn against San Diego State. I think UConn is a championship-level team. The Aztecs are going to give them a game, but I think UConn wins that one. Alabama, North Carolina is kind of interesting to me. I like Alabama's athleticism in that game. I know North Carolina's a 1 seed, but I'm not saying Alabama's going to win. Just keep an eye on that game. And then I love the way Iowa State's playing right now. Holy cow, what they've done through the Big 12 tournaments. The Cyclones right now look like one of those teams that has got its mindset, you know, it's kind of set its face on Phoenix in the Final Four. So I think I like Iowa State in that ballgame.
My 10-year-old has Illinois winning it all, so he does not like your breakdown of that one at all.
My apologies.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Bowden just told me that's what he told him because John's over at my house talking to him right now. better not be. My kid should be in school right. Actually, he's not.
Right.
We have a 2-hour late start. We have snow here, so actually he would maybe be home yet. Okay, then on Friday, we've got NC State, kind of a Cinderella here. They won 7 games in 12 days. They won 5 games in 5 days in the ACC. And, you know, you talk about making shots. NC State is a perfect example. The semifinals of the ACC tournament against Virginia, they were beaten. And Virginia missed a front end of a 1-1. They had nobody to rebound on the lane. They fired it up. They shot a prayer that banked in the force overtime. If they don't make that shot, they're not in this tournament. They make the shot. They win in overtime. Now they're in the Sweet 16, and they take on Marquette. Let's just start right there. You just saw Marquette. NC State's the up-and-comer. Pressure definitely will be on Marquette, who I think is a little bit relieved. They made it to the Sweet 16 after getting bounced in the second round a year ago. Does NC State have a decent chance in this game, or do you think Marquette that's going to roll?
Well, I think they've got a shooter's chance. Just the fact that they were playing Virginia and Virginia did what it did in the NCAA tournament with that offense. Holy cow, that was brutal, wasn't it? I think Marquette. I really like their team, and I look for guard play all the time. Come this time of year, Cam Jones is a great scorer, and I already talked about Tyler Kolek. I think he might be the best point guard remaining in the tournament. So I got to go with Marquette. Just the way they play, I love the energy. You know what they do? It is nonstop pressure. When you play Marquette, you never get a break.
Yeah.
Every single time up and down the court, you better get a stop. You better get a make a shot, and that wears teams out after a while. And I think Marquette will wear out NC State, I think, in that ball game.
Yeah, and that happened to KU earlier in the year out at Maui. I think that's exactly what happened to KU when they played them. Gonzaga and Purdue is intriguing. Purdue, I picked them to win it all, and the only logic was, well, Virginia lost to a 16 seed. The very next year, they won it all. And I tell you, the game I was most worried about was the first one. Get over the psychological hurdle of beating a 16. They destroyed Utah State in the second round, and of course, a lot of people are going to jump on their bandwagon now, that and, of course, UConn. But Gonzaga is a team that's playing very well, destroyed KU in the second half the other day. Their offense is super efficient. I know you're probably familiar with Gonzaga a little bit out your way. Gonzaga and Purdue, what do you think about that one?
Well, I think that's an interesting game. Mark Few, think of this for a second. Mark Few, when he got to Gonzaga for that job, they had not ever won a tournament game. They had not won a conference tournament game when he got there. And you consider now they've been in 9 consecutive Sweet 16s. I think Mark Few is a phenomenal coach. However, with that being said, I like Matt Painter as well, by the way. And I sitting and watching Purdue the last few days, as I was in Indianapolis and getting a look at them. Now, they're not going to have the home court advantage they did in Indianapolis. I walked in the gym, by the way, the first day for our first shoot-around, and I looked up, and the place is packed for a shoot-around.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, holy cow, look at the black and gold. This is awesome. And then I realized everyone had a P on their shirt. Now I see you. But it looked really good from an aesthetic standpoint. I like Purdue a lot, and I think they're very good. So I think that's going to be a heck of a ball game. But, you know, Zach Edey and company, who is just by the way, there's one more note. I've been around some big people in my life. I've interviewed Shaquille O'Neal and David Robinson and Patrick Ewing and go on back to all the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar one time. I never interviewed Mao Yang. I think Zach Edey's the largest man I've ever seen in my entire life. Holy cow, is that a big human being.
Yes,
I mean, everywhere. The size of his legs, the broadness of his shoulders. I'm real impressed by him. But I think overall, from a team standpoint, I do think Purdue survives and gets by Gonzaga and goes to the Elite Eight.
And then you got Duke against number one seed Houston that survived a big scare, nearly blew the game against A&M, went to overtime, but then hung on and won. And it was unbelievable to watch a walk-on go out there and shoot a clutch free throw, which I was so happy that kid made one out of two. Duke is a team that they have a lot of talent. They haven't really put it together consistently throughout the year. In my bracket, I had Duke knocking off Houston, and as much as I can't stand Duke, but I had Duke knocking off Houston this round. What do you think about this matchup, Duke and Houston, the Sweet 16 on Friday?
Well, that Houston-Texas A&M game, did I see that right, that Texas A&M shot 45 free throws?
Yeah, they shot way more than Houston.
Yeah, and Houston had, three or four guys fouling out. That's why that game remained that close. I thought A&M had a shooter's chance in that one. I like Houston in this ballgame. I know the spread's like 4.5 or 5 or something. I think Houston coming off that one's going to be very good. Duke's talented. I don't think Duke's a great team, and so I think Houston's going to roll in this one.
All right, and then Creighton and Tennessee I think is going to be a fantastic game. Tennessee and Texas was an ugly second-round game. Tennessee was 3 of 25 from 3. Creighton can light it up. They don't play much from their bench. In fact, two of their starters have played the entire two games, and the second game went to double overtime in a win over Oregon, which Oregon made a huge mistake by throwing into the worst foul shooter late in that game. He missed the front end 1-1 that allowed Creighton to tie it and eventually go into overtime and then win in double overtime. Tennessee, a team that, you know, lost early in the SEC tournament, they're solid defensively. They play very physical. And how many times do we see a team really struggle from three-point land and then survive, and then the next time just light it up? What do you think, Creighton and Tennessee?
Well, I think that's a pretty good matchup. Coach McDermott and I have known each other for 30 years. He and I were both at the University of North Dakota together long, long time ago. So I always kind of secretly cheer for them a little bit because I'm such a big fan of his. Tennessee's awful good. Dylan Connect, what was at Northern Colorado last year, as you well know, nearly came to Colorado, by the way, during the offseason. And ends up, because I think they had a much bigger NIL check for him, goes to Tennessee. It's had a phenomenal year. I think this is an interesting game. I just think when it's all said and done, Tennessee, go back to what I talked about a little bit with Marquette, the constant pressure on Creighton will just be a little bit too much for them. I like the big guy that you know that Creighton's got inside. I'm losing his name. Big white kid.
Brenner, yeah.
Yeah, who gave in Folly Dante all he wanted in that ballgame. I think he's very good inside, but I think Tennessee's too deep and too much of a quality team, and they'll wear Creighton out by the end of the ballgame, I think.
Before the tournament began, who did you think was going to win it all? Who would have been your pick?
Oh, I like UConn. I think UConn's outstanding, and that's why I have a tough time picking against them at all. And then Houston, I thought, was very, very good as well.
Okay.
And so they were probably the two teams I probably focused on.
All right. So let's shift now to football. We're talking Mark Johnson, voice of Colorado Buffaloes. Colorado football next season. You know, great start at the beginning of the Deion Sanders era. His son was lighting it up, and then it came down to earth and didn't make it to a bowl game. What about next season for Colorado and then the dynamic of the – there's always a honeymoon period, and there's no doubt that was quite the honeymoon period for Deion Sanders, but then it kind of fell flat at the end. What are your impressions moving into year two of Deion's tenure at Colorado?
First off, when you're Deion Sanders and you have that kind of charisma and that magnitude of personality, that honeymoon period goes on for a long time. All right, so that's number one. Number two is people have been asking me, okay, spring ball's underway. You got the spring game coming up on April 27th. You know, what do you think of this team? I don't know. You know, it's fascinating. Just for the second year, I can't tell you what I really think of the team because there's so many new players on it. I mean, he has become, I think, probably the gold standard in using the portal. And, again, there's a number of portal guys coming in, entirely new offensive line, a number of skill guys. You know, the quarterback, obviously, Shadur is still there, and you think very highly of him. I think he's an outstanding quarterback and a first-round NFL draft big time. But I don't know. And on top of it, you throw two new coordinators on top of it as well. And so we're getting to know. Now, Pat Shurmur, we've got an idea what he's going to do on the offensive end. Robert Livingston, I've got a chance to talk with him a number of times. I think he's a very engaging young guy, and I think by all accounts, everyone I've kind of called to talk to about him as a coach give him very high marks, but I can't say that I know the guy. And so this is the first time he's been a coordinator. We're going to find out about what he does. And so I'm optimistic in many fronts, and I'm excited about it, and moving into the Big 12 and all that incurs. And then you look at the non-conference slate, and you've got North Dakota State coming in here for Game 1, which is going to be a fascinating game. I've got connections, of course, in that regard.
Yeah.
Then you go to Nebraska, and then to Colorado State. And so the non-conference slate, I think, is going to be very difficult, just like it was last year. And then you jump into Big 12 play and see what the whole new, that whole new league is going to be about. So I'm excited. I'm optimistic. I think they're going to have a great year. I like what Prime has done from a talent standpoint that he's brought in. But it's hard for me to evaluate at this point in time. Now that I'm home and basketball's over, I'll get a chance to watch some practices here, over the next few weeks before we get ready for the spring game on April 27th. But and I might have a better evaluation, coming up here in a few weeks. But at this point, it's hard to say just because, once again, for the second year in a row, there's so much new and unknown that we're all trying to digest.
I'm going to ask you a question that I think a lot of people might be curious about, and that is, what's it like covering a team that's led by Deion Sanders, but more specifically, what's it like in dealing with Deion? Because you talked about your relationship with Tad Boyle. He's calling you and you're on top of the mountain about, hey, we're going to what? But Deion is a unique individual, and there's pros and cons to all that. And one thing that it seems to be, and I don't know this because I'm not behind the scenes, you are, is he what he is on camera? Because sometimes we see athletes and coaches and celebrities, they act one way on camera or on the floor. And then the next thing you know, wow, they're a big teddy bear off of it. Or they seem so nice on the floor, but they're a real jerk off of it, whatever the case may be. What's Deion like to deal with?
Well, in terms of kind of the, play-by-play guy, coach interaction, obviously it's different than anything I've ever dealt with. Because in virtually every other circumstance, you walk down the hallway, you stick your head in the office, you say, hey, coach, we need to do this or that, or whatever it might be, and you have interaction. Well, and what I'm saying here is not a criticism, it's just a fact. Deion Sanders is a corporation. He's a brand. He is a iconic figure. He's got brand people, assistants, marketing people around him, social media people around him, agents around him. And so everything you do with him is very highly scheduled out. There are people that are leading him around and saying, you know, because he's got 10,000 balls in the air at any given time. And so he is always on the move. Every time you see him, he's got something that's coming up in just a moment. So when we have an appointment together, for example, if we're on camera to do something, he and his folks will come walking on in. He sits down. You exchange pleasantries. Coach, how are you? Mark, I'm fine. Bing, bing, bing. They have the cameras ready. They say, fellas, we're ready. Coach, you're ready. Bing, you go 3-2-1, and you're on the air. You do what you're doing on the air. You get done. And I say, thanks, Coach. He goes, oh, you're very welcome. And his people say, all right, Coach, we got to get going. And they sweep him out of the room. And so, you know, it's I bring that up not because it's a bad set of circumstances that I deal with. It's just a very different set of circumstances. And I understand why it is. You know, Tad Boyle and I will sit in his office for an hour and have a conversation. That's not going to happen with Prime and me because it's not allowed to happen, and it can't because of all that's going on, because of what he does. It's beyond coaching. It's into the like I said, the brand management, all that kind of stuff. And so it's just very different to deal with. It's not bad. Now, the negative side of it is I can't go and sit down and have long conversations and get great in-depth insights into what's going on. Mm-hmm. You do miss that, so that's something that's not ideal from my standpoint. But, you know, that's certainly not I wouldn't call that it's not a criticism. It's just a kind of a byproduct of what life is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he made a comment on a podcast here. I don't know if this was yesterday or a couple of days ago, about his son, Colorado quarterback Shedeur Sanders. And he also mentioned, referring to Travis Hunter, of course, who plays offense and defense, saying that they will refuse to play for certain teams and that they might even pull an Eli Manning. He said, and I quote, I know where I want them to go. So it's certain cities that ain't going to happen. It's going to be an Eli, referring to Eli Manning, who said, hey, you take me. I'm not going to play for you. Eventually, the Chargers took him anyway and then traded him to the Giants, and everything worked out for both programs or teams after all that happened. What's your take on that? Because, you know, we see Caleb Williams, and this is somebody you've covered, of course, out in the Pac-12. There have been lots of rumors, Caleb Williams saying lots of things out there about how he may not play for a certain team that he's drafted, or he'll only go to this team if they draft him, or he might hold out, or he might not sign. Are we going down the wrong way here, or is that just the way things are going to become for these high-profile athletes with all the celebrity, the NIL money, and this and that, to say, you know what, I know you can draft me, but I can maybe still have a little bit of pull as to where I'm going to go?
Well, that's a deep, interesting conversation off that question. Uh-huh. We have seen, you know, here in Denver, John Elway essentially did that when he was drafted way back in the 80s. I mean, he forced the issue that he was not going to play for. Was it Sandy? No, who? Oh, Baltimore. I think it was Baltimore at the time, that drafted him at the time. But I saw somebody the other day. I can't remember who said it, but somebody was indicating that based on these comments by Prime, that we are entering a period of player empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the NFL, unlike the other leagues, has always had a reputation that they set the agenda and the players had to follow. Now, I would ask this question here for these players out there, because, by the way, the players haven't struggled much in the NFL. They've made their money. Make no mistake about it.
Yep.
They've made their millions. They've done very well off this. The NFL is the largest, most untouchable organization in sports. The success is unmatched by anybody. And so when I see this push that, oh, players should have more empowerment, well, we see that in other sports where they do. And guess what? Their ratings, their money, their popularity does not match the NFL. So is it a smart thing to continue to push in that direction and potentially damage your sport? What the NFL has always done, they talk about the shield. It's all about the shield, and what they mean by that is the logo. It's all about the game. It's not promoting the stars. It's promoting the game, promoting the organization. That has kept it unbelievably strong for a long period of time. When you start to promote the individual, then the popularity is going to ebb and flow with the individuals. If the popularity, if the people follow them, if the endorsements follow them, I don't think it's the smartest way to go. Does that mean that you can't have some more, shall we say, pull by the players? I think you probably could and still be safe. But I get a little bit nervous when it becomes about the me and not the we. I don't necessarily think that's always a good direction.
No, I agree with you, too. And then just to piggyback that a little bit, I'm sure you're aware of this. Press conference Shedeur Sanders had, he made a comment about how he beat the odds. He is a small private school in Texas, and he took some shots at quarterbacks that played at the higher classification 5A and 6A schools in Texas and so forth and so on. But a lot of this doesn't check out when you look at the math and you look at the guys that actually have done well from bigger schools. Do you think, I believe it, but do you believe that with all the notoriety that Deion Sanders gets and his son at quarterback, who plays the most high-profile position you can on the football field, it is a sexy position. It is. You look at the National Football League, what players are being marketed most? Typically the quarterbacks, all you got to do is look at the guy that's the holding the Lombardi again. That's Patrick Mahomes. Do you believe that there are – obviously there are people that love that Deion is different. And Shedeur Sanders is outspoken as well sometimes, and even saying things like, hey, we might pull an Eli if we don't want to go to a cold weather city. But do you think there is a pretty big faction, or maybe they're a minority, that also watch from afar and say, can't wait for these guys to fail?
Oh, I think that happens with anybody. Yeah. Anybody that has a bit of bravado and a bit of confidence, people are always looking for them to fail.
Yeah.
So that's number one about that. I think that's just human nature. We all do that. We see, you know, it's why many of us of this age bracket, you know, don't really pull for Duke. We saw too much success by them.
Right.
It's why people, after a long period of time, didn't want to see the New England Patriots doing well. They've had too much. We want them to fall. So that's just kind of natural human nature, I think. The other aspect about the I've overcome the odds thing, you know, I chuckle at that all the time, that you see people that are at the top of their profession, and they say things, and I think it's more self-motivation than anything else is, that somehow I'm the underdog.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, really, you know, you think of Duke basketball, or, like I said, New England Patriot football, or, you know, New York Yankee baseball, when somehow it's us against the world. Really? Is it?
Yes.
I mean, you're at the top of your profession.
Yes.
You're at the top of your sport, and yet we have to find, you know, Michael Jordan used to do that.
He made stuff up.
Yeah, he would make stuff up to motivate himself to try and, you know, bring out, you know, that edge, if you will, in him. Kobe Bryant did the same thing. Tiger Woods has done that. You know, so when you see somebody that's sitting at the top and they're somehow expressing this idea that somehow, you know, I'm the hard scrabbled one that is coming up through this, and it's me against the world kind of thing. I dismiss that many times as just kind of that looking for that little edge I'm trying to gain.
It's hard to get to the top of a mountain, as you know. It's
yeah.
sometimes harder to stay there. And
yes.
And you were talking about how people hope for things to fail. It's like the Chiefs, and we predicted it right after they won their first Super Bowl. We said on the show, okay, they're the darlings. Everybody loves them.
There you go.
They're the new kid on the block, and the Patriots dynasty's dead. And we said, trust us, going forward, once the Chiefs win a second or get close to winning a second, or if they win a few more, they will become hated, they'll be despised, and people will
go.
Be turning on them so quick, and they will be the new Patriots that everybody loves to hate. And guess what? That's exactly what's happening.
Well, we you know, it's why, you know, people complain about Patrick Mahomes. They don't
yeah.
want to see his wife and his brother. They don't want to see right. Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. And, you know, you look for those little things, okay? They're on the top. I want to knock them down. And so that's just kind of natural for people. I think that's our human nature. I think it comes from places of envy. It comes
yes.
from places of, you know, what I want, you know, greed. It comes from all different places inside of us. But we all do that. You know, when Mike Tyson was at the top of his game, people automatically hated him. I mean, you know, look at all the people that decided that Tiger Woods over the years was a bad guy. And so very rarely do you see somebody at the top of their game, especially in the social media world in which we live in. They don't ultimately all of a sudden have a significant number of fans kind of turn on them. I've always been of the mindset, I appreciate excellence. And when somebody does something at a very high level
mm-hmm.
and they do it for an extended period of time, I'm appreciative of that. There are some people that become envious of that, and I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, time for a couple off-the-wall questions for the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, the best pipes in the business, Mark Johnson. All right, Deion has a nickname, as we know, a couple of them, Neon Deion, Primetime, so forth and so on. What is the best nickname for Mark Johnson, and are there some others that you have that maybe you don't care for?
I've really never had a nickname. You know, if anybody ever shortens the name of me, it's just MJ. You know, okay. So you hear that quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, I was, as, you know, I think I may have mentioned this on your show before, back in my long-haired maggot-infested disc jockey days, I was Magic Mark.
That's right. You did tell me that. That's right.
I was Magic Mark for a while. So that, I guess that was a nickname. That was more of an on-the-air kind of thing. But
yeah.
I guess that's one. When it pops up now, and every once in a while I'll hear it, if there's somebody, for example, I was at the NCAA tournament this past weekend, it actually happened. Somebody yelled Magic Mark, and I'm turned like, who in the world? And it was a guy up in the stands,
yeah.
And he kind of came to the railing, and I said, what? And he says, I'm from North Dakota. So he knew me back in the day when I was Magic Mark on the radio.
Yeah.
So I guess that's one. But really, I've never really had much of a nickname.
I do now remember you saying that because we joked about, wow, you know, are you related to Magic Mike and all that other stuff? And,
I always kept my clothes on.
Yeah, that's why he's in radio, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
So the last one here for the off the wall, and I want to set this up. So I'm having the best bracket that I've ever had, and I didn't watch as much college basketball as in the past. So less knowledge is better, I think, when you pick the bracket. 35-13. I'm third in our pool here at the radio station. We have our listeners. They all entered, so forth and so on. My 10-year-old is in second place. I'm in third, and my senior is in fourth. Mama Gershner is in the middle of the pack. And my record is 35-13 in regards to picking the games. John Bowden is 13-35. I know that is shocking. He is horrendous. I mean, he picked 3-16 seeds. Like, what are you doing? But the question for you off the wall question is, how is your bracket doing? And if you don't fill one out, do you follow how many people still have a perfect bracket or how things are going when it comes to brackets all the way across the country?
So I generally don't fill one out anymore. Okay. After years and years and years of doing that, I got away from that for the simple reason that I know too much, okay? I'm telling you, because the actual you just laid it out. So I'm not disparaging anybody that's doing well with their bracket, but you know when children years ago, in fact, I'll give you this. Here's a great example. When I stopped doing this, we had at a radio station I was at years ago. We had a woman who worked at our front desk that won three consecutive years.
Yeah.
She couldn't tell you if a basketball was blowing up or stuffed.
Right.
She knew nothing about the sport, and it had to do with colors and cities that she'd visited and on and on and on. And I thought, this is the most ridiculous thing in the world. Every year I would just sweat over the bracket, and I would go through and I'd look at stats, and I'd go to their conference standings, and I'd look at all kinds of stuff, and I would finish. You know, every once in a while I'd have a year where I jumped up and did okay. But for the most part, I was down in the middle of the pack. And I finally just said, you know, this is such a ridiculous labor of frustration for me. I'm just not going to do it. But now, with that being said, I do always get a kick out of watching that first weekend when, you know, CBS and ESPN start announcing how few perfect brackets are remaining.
Yeah.
And how they get broken. I'm always fascinated by that. And then the people that actually end up – by the way, I haven't checked the last few days. Is there a perfect bracket remaining at this point?
I think there are a few. Because, you know, all your ones and twos have still moved on. So I believe there's a few.
Okay, so there might still be. But it's always amazing to me that people, you know, will end up with a perfect bracket by the time it's all said and done. So it's become more of a spectator sport for me than it is anything else, just because of my own frustrations.
And see, that was my thinking going into when I filled mine out this year, is I didn't watch as much college basketball, so I didn't know maybe as much about these teams as I normally would, I'm having my best success ever in the bracket. I think that does tie together, like you said. And let's be honest, Mark, I can read between the lines here and the tea leaves. You don't fill out a bracket anymore because you're tired of getting embarrassed by people that didn't know anything about basketball but knew more about the basketball than you did when it came to the bracket.
Well, that's just it. So when my bracket was getting busted, and I'd be having, you know, fans and listeners, that kind of thing, like, dude, seriously, I listen to you. You're supposed to be a guy that knows basketball, and you get your tail kicked. And my point was always, well, it really doesn't have anything to do with that. It really doesn't. This is why we love March Madness, because it really doesn't follow the logical statistical storylines that it should, because there are so many different things that affect these games. And, you know, luck has, you know, years ago I had a conversation with Jim Tressel years ago, and I asked him about winning championships, and he said, Mark, you've got to be really good and you have to be really lucky. And there are moments of that. I mean, go back to what you just talked about a little while ago with that game with Houston and Texas A&M.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that happen? How does a walk-on come in and hit a free throw in a crunch-time situation? I mean, those things, you can't factor those things in with the logic you're trying to put together, which is why we love this sport and why every time I hear about them talking about changing the tournament, I'm like, don't touch this. Leave it alone. It's beautiful the way it is. It's unpredictable. It draws people in that have not a clue about basketball. They love the first few weekends because it is so unpredictable, and we see the great storylines and the great Cinderella stories and all that. And so I hope they just leave it alone. But, yes, there is a bit of pride that finally worked into me, and I said I can't do this every year. It's just, a labor of frustration for me.
So you're good with 68 and no more expansion? You're good with keeping at 68?
I'd be perfectly fine with that. I've got no issue with it. You know,
I
ran into my old buddy Jim Boeheim when we were in Dayton. He was doing the games for Westwood One, and so he and I chatted a little bit. He's, for years, has been saying we need to expand this, like, to 128. And because his point is that good coaches are being assessed on making the tournament or not making the tournament, or making the tournament, getting knocked out early, and good coaches are getting fired as a result. And he said, you know, if we expand this thing, that takes a little bit of that pressure off. And I understand that logic. I'm just not sure I agree with it. It's special, the fact that you make the field of 68. It's exceedingly hard. I know in your area, Kansas fans don't understand how hard it is to get in the tournament.
Right.
But it's incredibly difficult to make the tournament as an at-large team. Or you have to go through the battle of winning your conference tournament. It's very difficult to do that, and so I think it's just such a special model the way it's set up, and I'm not sure we should touch it.
Well, I heard people like, well, this Power 5, this Power 6 team, they should be in. You know, K-State was 19-14. Some other team was 18-15. I said, listen,
right. You
can still watch that game. It's called the NIT. You can still watch it. We don't need 15 lost teams in this tournament. They had plenty of opportunities to put their – I don't feel sorry for teams that are on the bubble, by the way, except for maybe an Indiana State, a mid-major that does great all year and has one bad day, and they don't get the opportunities as the Power 6 schools do. But for me, I'm sitting here like, I don't feel sorry for Villanova being on the bubble. I don't feel sorry for K-State being on the bubble. I don't feel sorry for Oklahoma or whoever it is from the Pac-12, because you had all the opportunities in the world. And the reason you're on the bubble is because you didn't win enough games. That's just my little soapbox on that.
And wait, every time you can go through, and this would have been true with Colorado as well, by the way, if the Buffs had not gotten in, and I thought their resume spoke for itself, but they lost at Cal, right? They lost an Arizona State game they shouldn't have. Every team, if you go back and you're objective about it,
you
can say, that was a bad loss, that was a bad loss, shouldn't have happened, and if we don't make it, we can point back to those games. And so, listen, fans always see with their hearts, not with their eyes.
Yep.
If you step back and you're objective about it, the teams in the bubble, they belong in the bubble because they have some blemishes on that resume. And so if Colorado wouldn't have gotten in, I would have howled like a dog in the night. I would have been upset about it. Okay, well, that's fine. We understand. But if when I got through the initial emotional reaction, I would have stepped back and said, boy, that game at Cal, that killed them.
Yep.
They shouldn't have lost that one. The Florida State game, they had the game. They let it get away down at Myrtle Beach, and they lost in overtime. That one hurt them. So there are reasons you don't make it. And so that's why I say, leave it as it is. Let's have this debate. Debate is good for college basketball.
Yes.
And then the tournament's awesome the way it is.
I say it's a beauty contest, and all you're trying to determine is who has one less wart. That's it.
There you go.
That's what I say.
Exactly.
By the way, to answer your question, there are no perfect brackets remaining on the men's side. There are four perfect brackets remaining in the women's tournament bracket. So
how about that?
How about that? Yeah.
All the lucky geniuses are gone this year on the men's side.
Yeah, not surprising. All those people that think they know something about basketball find out they really, truly don't.
Exactly right.
Mark, man, I appreciate your time. It's always great catching up with you. We hope that you enjoy your time off or your rest time in between seasons. As you mentioned, you're getting into spring football and everything that goes with that. We look forward to you and Colorado being part of the Big 12 and look forward to seeing you more often come this way.
Be out there on a regular basis now. I look forward to it. Always good to join you, Wayne.
Take care. Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes here on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair.